WGN, John Williams. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're here weekdays from noon to 1 o'clock. Anna DeVlantis informs and entertains you after that. And you can hear me from 9 to noon all the way till 1 o'clock now in the Wintrust Business Lunch mode, which means I reach out to some experts like Elise Glink, who has been on with us a couple of times in the last couple of days, but each time just to try and follow the auto insurance questions our listeners have been having. Elise, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, John. How can I help?
Well, I know you know a lot of things about a lot of things, but this one just seems to be so near and dear to a lot of people. And I wanted to share, after you were on with us last, some of the texts that people have sent in. And maybe you and I can talk about it. Maybe you and I can find some answers down the road. John, car insurance refunds. I'm only hearing crickets from my carrier, AAA Motor Club, Member Select. The insurance companies are not required to give rebates to their members, correct?
That is correct. And so while most of the 35 of the largest auto insurers have announced some amount of refunds, credits, or reductions to account for the COVID changes, not all of them had made such, you know, have come out and sort of said it. But what people should do is go to your insurance company's website and see if they've got a COVID response page. We've looked at over 100 financial services companies, banks, credit card companies, mortgage lenders, auto insurers, and all of these that we've looked at, 100 of them, have COVID response pages where they talk about what they're doing for consumers. So you should go to your auto insurer and see what they're saying.
While the numbers are big, billions of dollars are being rebated, to the individuals, it may not be that much. I'll share with you two other texts since you and I last visited. John, car insurance COVID rebates, a 15% rebate. It's got to be on 2 months, and that comes to $12.90 for not driving at all. Sheesh, says a Liberty Mutual holder. Another one said, John, it's a joke. We pay over $1,200 a year to a different company, and they gave us $19.12 yesterday. I thought I was seeing things like $50, but I guess it just depends on what your premium is, because they're advertising percentages, not total dollar amounts.
That is correct. I, for example, I'm with USAA. This is not an advertisement, by the way, but that is who we have our coverage with, and they're sending us a check for $40. Now, we have three cars that we insure, one which is a total beater that's like 15 years old that I'm not even sure why we have anything like except collision on it, and then two that are newer. And we're going to get $40 or $50 back in total for the three cars. So I think some of this also depends on the number of vehicles, how new they are, how fancy they are, and that kind of thing.
John, I drive less than 10 miles a week, and I don't get a lower rate to begin with. Can you ask an expert why about that? I've asked for a discount and have been told it's something it's not. It says here it's something they offer. I presume they meant something they don't offer. But if you don't like your insurance rate, I would go to an insurance broker and get better coverage or a better rate.
Not only that, I mean, shopping around really pays off for things like auto insurance, homeowners insurance, some other, well, obviously, I think everything should be shopped around, but cell phone coverage plans in particular, if you have not shopped that around in the past couple of years. Second tip for saving money is bundling things. So if you bundle auto insurance plus homeowners insurance, that might yield a bigger discount.
John, I live in Wisconsin. I got a $150 check in the mail yesterday from American Family Insurance for my three cars. And again, I'm just guessing here, at least, but if you have expensive cars with higher premiums and you've also elected higher premium coverage, maybe your deductible is different, then maybe you're going to get a bigger check.
Absolutely. And he also lives in Michigan, not Illinois. So rates may be different. They may have a different level of, you know, coverage, as you point out. And, of course, you know, that Lamborghini, boy, expensive to insure.
Well, that's it. They didn't tell us what their total premium was. They said Wisconsin, but I get your point. It depends on where you are, rural, city, et cetera. And then unrelated to all of that, Elise, I work in a restaurant, John, as a salaried employee. I'm still employed, but my salary is reduced. I'm terrified for us to reopen in-house dining. It seems too soon. That's the yin and yang of this, isn't it, Elise?
It really is, John. And it's, I think, what health officials and economic experts are struggling with in Washington. And you see this play out in real time in, you know, the president's press conferences every day. There's a real tug going on right now between the governors, the president, the economic people, the health people, because nobody really knows. So I feel for this guy. I've got a restaurant underneath my office. They were going gangbusters before this started. They had 15 employees. I think there are four people there now, and nobody. No, I mean, people come in to pick up coffee, and they pick up some donuts and food occasionally. Everything is brought to the curb. It's very scary to think about you putting yourself at physical health risk by simply doing your job. And my heart goes out to your listener and everybody out there who's struggling with this.
Visit Think Glink, Elise Glink. I'll visit with you again. Thanks again.
You bet, John.
Take care. By the way, we like to visit with businesses in the Chicago area on the Wintrust Business Lunch to ask them how they are managing. The owner of Portillo's says hi to us after the 12:30 news. John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch joining us again. John DeGeri and founder of MarketRebellion.com on financial news and education and the markets themselves. John, another up day, 400 or 500 points, I guess, at least last I looked. What are you hearing and seeing today?
Well, just as you say, John, the market made a nice move in the pre-market. That more or less was foretold yesterday late in the day, real late, like in the final 15 or 20 minutes. They started buying an awful lot of stocks, drove the NASDAQ into the green, even though the broad market, S&P 500 and Dow did finish negative. The NASDAQ actually screamed up into the green, partially by Netflix and partially by Apple, and they're both providing additional lift today.
If I were only going to follow one index relative to my 401k, my chance to retire someday, would that be the S&P? I mean, we all think about the Dow, but it's the S&P that matters more, right?
Yes, that's the one that anybody that, as they say, benchmarks, meaning that they're judging their performance based on how an index does, they are benchmarked to the S&P 500. I don't know of anybody benchmarked to the Dow. There are some benchmarked to the NASDAQ, and those would be very tech-heavy ETFs and or mutual funds.
But there's this habit, and at least we relate to the Dow number. So I guess that's a metric of sorts. Do they all tend to move together, or do you sometimes maybe now see a split that the blue chippers are going one way and the other companies are going another?
Well, the Dow has tried to recreate itself throughout its history. And as it has done that, it has added a lot of tech stocks, for instance, like Apple. But on the other hand, there are days, clearly, John, when we do see a stock like Boeing, for instance, that has an outperformance or underperformance that is a fairly key stock within the Dow. And that is a price-weighted, so the S&P 500 weights them based on market cap, and the Dow just bases its weighting on the price. So if indeed you've got a $150 or $200 stock, and earlier this year, of course, the Boeing was $350, it's going to have a lot more pull than will a 3M, for instance, or even a Johnson & Johnson, which are both also parts of the Dow.
So then as an arbiter for the recovery, all the more reason to follow the S&P.
Yes, sir. Yep. And it's up 2.5% at mid-session. The Dow is up 2%. And the NASDAQ, which, like I say, outperformed yesterday, is clearly outperforming again, up 3.5% just today.
But J.P. Morgan is not seeing Rose as a fairly severe recession, they're forecasting.
Yes. J.P. Says that they see that possibility. And as they said it, their stock went from positive to negative.
Yeah. Well, then so they shouldn't have said that, John.
I would agree with you. In fact, early this morning, the stock was trading $100 a share just in the first 15 minutes of trading. Now it's trading under 95, down about 3.5%. So when J.P. Morgan talks, people do listen. But right now, they're also focused on the stocks that are going to get the most lift as they perceive the potential that we start coming out of the freezing up of the economy, even if it is in various locales across the country, small at first and then hopefully gathering steam.
Is the greatest danger a credit crisis? If the big banks don't have the money or choose not to lend the money, then nobody recovers. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure, that would be a big thing. And obviously that's what the Fed tried to address with those multiple moves that they've made since the crisis began. They've made two multi-trillion dollar moves. And in one case, that was specifically targeting small and medium enterprises, or those SMEs that you hear them reference all the time. And in the other, it was municipal, so that they could go in and step in and, for instance, buy bonds for Chicago or for various municipalities across the country to support them as they are experiencing perhaps not as much revenue from all of the different. I mean, every time a plane takes off at O'Hare, obviously Chicago makes money, gets money. And there hasn't been much of that lately. Same thing with Midway, same thing with sales tax at restaurants and retailers. So we're still spending money, but it's not nearly the same, and municipalities are hurting because of that. So the Fed stepped in with that last week on Thursday with that $2.3 trillion.
Right.
And obviously they stepped in the first time with taking rates down and throwing trillions of dollars at the bigger issue like J.P. Morgan's and the Bank America Merrill's and Citigroup's and so forth.
How well are those banks doing at distributing the money, loaning the money out?
Well, it depends on who you are a customer of, yeah, because they are definitely preferencing those folks. So if you're a small and medium-sized business in Chicago and you deal, as we do, for instance, with Fifth Third is very slow about addressing this. But I've heard from many folks that Citi and J.P. Morgan have been very strong, if that is your bank. So if it's not your bank and you might try to go over there and say, boy, I should go over to J.P. Morgan and get this loan instead of over at Fifth Third, they probably won't even pick up the phone because you're not a customer. There's issues that come up because of relationships, and relationships are always worth something, especially in a time like this.
And staffing, too. I mean, forget about new customers. If all of your existing business customers want you to help them with an application, you probably don't have the staff to handle that.
Very true. Very true. And some of these big banks, the biggest ones like JP and Citi, have done hundreds of thousands. They're processing hundreds of thousands of those SBA loans every week. And so you can imagine that that's a lot tougher at a time when much of your staff is trying to work from home rather than having the benefit of all the computers and everything else, the internet speed in the office versus the speed of perhaps their online connection at home.
John Najarian is on a phone line, the founder of MarketRebellion.com. After WGN Radio News with Steve Bertrand, in 3 minutes, we'll visit with the owner of Portillo's, speaking of following local businesses, and we're also focused on the restaurant industry. I see them still doing a good business, but ain't nobody sitting in those places, so we'll talk to them about how they are doing. 12 stocks that are beating the market during the coronavirus crisis. Barron's has a list. I don't know what you make of this. What are you seeing here, and what jumps out at you, John?
The one that absolutely jumps out at me is Netflix, because this stock has been killing it, and for obvious reasons. It went screaming past Disney as far as market cap, and people might think to themselves, Disney has, you know, ESPN, they've got all those theme parks, they've got the movies, and that's the problem for Disney right now, unfortunately. What was their, many of us thought, their armor has now been stripped away because they don't have the theme parks. Nobody's going to movies, and ESPN has nothing to air. Granted, they're running their specials and replaying things, but I don't know how much real traffic they get from that. Meanwhile, Netflix has screamed all the way up to today. It hit 417, which would be a new 52-week high for the year. That stock is up from, right around 329 to 417. I mean, it's just been a zoom to the upside. And I don't see that stopping, quite frankly. I think that people that love this service are not about to drop it. Disney Plus has done very well, too. But for those reasons I mentioned, Disney is not the focus as far as streaming. Spotify may be doing better than Disney during this time.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I've been on Spotify every night and every day, listening to more music than I ever have. And I guess we all know why. Same with Netflix. In fact, my frustration with some of the streaming services I subscribe to is that they're a little choppy right now, and I presume that's a function of demand. I think sometimes these systems are getting overloaded.
I would agree. They're probably overloaded, and or our, not just yours, broadband at home might be taxed by all of the users within that house. Normally, you know, it's a much smaller universe of people using it all at the same time.
Would this be a good time to invest in Walgreens or Walmart? Anybody that's in the pharmacy or grocery business, it would seem to me to be good. In a good place. And for that matter, maybe just whole sectors. Is there a fund that somebody can get that focuses on those areas?
There probably is, although I like defining my bets. I know that it's great to spread out the risk, but I, for me anyway, I would much rather bet on the winners being Walmart and Target right here. Walmart has clearly done a fantastic job. So has Target, by the way. And if you look at these two against each other, Walmart gets almost half their revenue from groceries. That they beat everybody in that category, really. But as Target CEO Brian Cornell has said many times, I don't want half of our revenue coming from the groceries because it's such a low-margin business. Even now, it's a low-margin business. They would much rather make the money on bigger ticket items, and Target, I think, has really done a great job with that. If you compare the two performance-wise this year, they're both up. Target's up about 7.5%, Walmart's up 13%, and Walmart has been strong because so many of us are using them as an alternative to Prime because of the grocery side of their business, because Prime, in many cases, can't deliver as much or as frequently as Walmart has been able to ever since they made that real big infrastructure investment into their online groceries.
Financial news with John Najarian. You can find him at marketrebellion.com. By the way, the Dow's up 513, but as John just schooled us, the S&P matters. It's up 73. We'll visit again, John. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your week.
You too, sir. You know, at the Portillo's website, they've got coloring pages for you, too. Michael Osanloo is on a phone line, and he's the CEO of Portillo's. Hey, Michael, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Great, John. Thanks for having me. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. You notice, I did notice that you guys do have a coloring page for people on your website as well.
I appreciate that. Anything to keep folks entertained during this stay at home.
I frequently visit one of your stores on the west side of Joliet in the Shorewood Plainfield area. Not exactly sure what municipality is. It's off of Route 59. And whenever I go there, there's usually a pretty good line of cars. But I understand you're not doing in-store dining. How is business for Portillo's right now?
You know, look, we're hanging in there, and I think a lot of the credit goes to the amazing drive-thrus that Dick Portillo started, right? Our drive-thrus work so quickly, and our guests, particularly in Chicago, have gotten really comfortable with our performance in the drive-thru. So while I think a lot of restaurant companies are being absolutely decimated by the COVID-19 at stay-at-home shelter, we're hanging in there. We're probably down 25% on any given week. And, you know, I never thought I'd say that's good, but that's pretty good.
Yeah, I got to process that for just a second here, because 25% sounds devastating, especially to a business like yours. And yet, boy, it could be a lot worse, right?
I think that's exactly the right way to think about this. You know, I talk to my board on a regular basis, and it's bizarre to me that we're celebrating negative 25%. It's allowed, you know, the best thing about being negative 25% is that we haven't had to take a lot of the more draconian actions that others have vis-a-vis their team members. So we haven't had any layoffs. We're not firing people. We do have some reduced hours, but we're doing our best to take care of our folks on the front lines.
You have 4,600 employees?
A little more than that, but yeah, I think it's closer to 6,000 now in total.
And you have not had to lay anybody off. Some people have taken fewer hours. Are there pay cuts for executives or some managers?
Yeah, we're doing, let's start with the front line, because I think that's the most important. These are, you know, many of the people who work for us in the front line work paycheck to paycheck. And what we've been able to do is take care of anybody who wants to work. Everyone who wants to work is getting hours.
Right.
We've had a small number of people want to do a voluntary furlough, and they tend to be people with underlying conditions, and they want to be safe. And where we've done that, we have done everything in our power to support them. So if it's a voluntary furlough without any doctor's order, we're still providing health benefits. I don't want anybody to not have health benefits at this time. If it's people who are under doctor's orders to self-quarantine, we're paying them while they're at home. So we've tried to do that to be very, very thoughtful. My team has done a tremendous amount of belt tightening, but, you know, in the spirit of never wasting a good crisis, one of the things that we are doing that I'm incredibly proud of is we're starting a 501(c) internally. And we have team members, executives donating pay anywhere from, you know, weeks to months of pay into a 501(c) that would be used for the benefit of our hourly team members on the front lines.
You're right. I think Portillo's is famous for a number of things, including the drive-through system. And the other day it was kind of spitting some rain and your staff was out there, which I always admire, the sort of pleasantness that I see when I'm out shopping. And it's just so efficient. And I think, boy, this is a tough way to make a living, but they seem to be on their game. And then I thought, not only do they have to sometimes deal with the elements, but now they're dealing with me. I'm handing them cash or a credit card through the window. Yeah. What are you telling them about social distancing and safety?
Yeah. First, I want to reiterate what you said. I am amazed and in awe of our frontline folks. They are unbelievable at how well they do their jobs. We have done everything that local health departments, the CDC, and to some extent the World Health Organization have dictated. So our team members are wearing gloves to be safe. We're asking our guests to use credit cards as opposed to cash in order to be safe. We're wearing masks. We sourced masks. Unclear whether or not that is absolutely health-wise necessary, but it certainly makes people feel better, and I think it's smart if for no other reason. And we've been asking our folks to make sure that they are engaging in appropriate social distancing. In some of our restaurants, we have basically put in new stripes so that our team members can stay as far apart as possible. We're even teaching them, it's little things, John, like how to hand food to a guest without standing in front of the window, but standing, you know, a little bit further up right. on the windshield side and handing it over the side mirror. But they're doing a great job. We coach up our teams on a daily basis. We are doing everything we can to the extent of having thermometers, the temporal thermometers in our restaurants to make sure that our folks, if they don't have access to a thermometer, they can get their temperature checked. And if they're feeling under the weather, we can check their temperature for them.
One last question I let you go, and that is, quickly, are there menu items that you notice that are more popular now as a result? Are people eating more chocolate cake or something like that?
Yeah. Not surprisingly, all of the comfort food menu items are going through the roof. So our beef sandwiches, burgers, hot dogs, French fries, and of course the iconic chocolate cake and the chocolate cake shake are all doing really, really well.
Who's surprised? Although, I don't think I've ever gone to a Portillo's. I know I've never gone to a Portillo's. I didn't get a chicken chop salad. I mean, I just can't get out of there without that thing. That's what gets me in there. I think your burgers are the most underrated because the Italian beef and hot dogs are what people think about.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a better burger regularly in the city.
I totally agree with you, and I totally agree with you that it's underrated. I could wax on about why it's the quality of the ingredients that make it so good, but I agree. I think our burger is one of the best burgers in the country.
Keep employing those people. Keep everybody safe, Michael, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John. Be safe yourself.
Michael Austin-Liu is the CEO of Portillo's. It's 12:42, and now the WGN Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Chicago-based LSC Communications has filed for bankruptcy. That comes less than a year after calling off a $1.4 billion planned merger with rival printing firm Quad Graphics. The company prints magazines, catalogs, things like that. It has suffered from what it calls an unprecedented drop last year in demand for magazines and catalogs. Speaking of catalogs, Lands' End has furloughed 70% of its corporate employees. The clothing retailer announced the move last week in light of the coronavirus crisis. The mayor says about 1,000 workers are being furloughed in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. And Grubhub is pulling back on its 2020 profit expectations as it responds to the pandemic. Grubhub saw orders decline significantly in New York City, which has been hit hardest by the coronavirus. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, Steve. Back to Steve Bertrand for markets.
Numbers are up. The Dow up 543 points so far today. The NASDAQ up 309. That's 3.7%. And the S&P 500 up 77.
Thank you, Steve. Orion Samuelson, what's news on the agribusiness front?
Agriculturally, the grain market is not higher today. It's lower, but there are several factors as to why the coronavirus demand risks in the meat market that take the grains and the soybean meal that farmers produce are concerned about that. Several meat processing plants temporarily closed in the last week after outbreaks of the coronavirus among workers, and that prompts fears of a knock-on effect on demand for soybean meal, widely used in feeding livestock. The Colin Woodall of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association talked about the beef packing plant closures that have been announced this week. Let me quote a little bit of what he said. The Cattlemen's Association, concerned about the closure of the JBS-owned beef packing plant in Greeley, Colorado. The company reports the plant is closing for a two-week period after several employees fell ill. But the one thing that I want to stress again, currently there is no shortage of beef, and consumers can continue to be confident about the safety and the wholesomeness of the products they are purchasing during the crisis. There is no evidence that COVID-19 can be transmitted by food or food packaging. However, it is always important to follow good hygiene practices when handling or preparing foods. And the season is here. Our first weekly crop report issued yesterday afternoon by the Department of Agriculture. 3% of the corn crop in the United States had been planted as of Sunday night. That's the same as a year ago. Winter wheat, 62% reported a good to excellent condition. That's the same as a week ago. And U.S. winter wheat, 6% is headed. 7% is the five-year average, according to USDA. And the Department of Agriculture unveiled a one-stop shop of federal programs that can be used by rural communities, organizations, and individuals impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The Federal Reserve Resource Guide is a first-of-its-kind resource for rural leaders who are looking for federal funding and partnership opportunities to help address the pandemic. And one other note, Harvard Milk Day, normally held the first weekend of June Dairy Month at Harvard, Illinois, well, they've moved it to the fall. We'll give you the details on that a little bit later, but there is no Harvard Milk Day celebration the first weekend of June Dairy Month. That's Your Money on 720 WGN.
Thanks again to Michael Osunlu. I think I'm saying that right. The CEO of Portillo's. It's not the Portillo family anymore, you know. It's owned by a different group, and he's the CEO. This texter said, John, please ask Portillo's to open up in Seminole Mall in Florida. They've got a great location in Tampa, but for a St. Petersburg, Florida resident, it's a bit of a drive for a delicious sandwich with jardiniere and chocolate. Love the show. Love Portillo's even more. Got a lot of listeners in Florida. Amy Guth, and I forgot to pass that along to him off the air. I will. But I suppose that's what happens. Amy, you've done this before maybe where you have a favorite restaurant. And when you talk to the guy that runs it, you say, hey, open up one near me.
That's right.
But if they, you know, it's, but I feel that way about Malnati's and Portillo's. I'd love to have one at the end of my block. I'm kind of glad we don't have one at the end of my block.
Right, right. My cholesterol thanks me for not having one closer to me.
Speaking of restaurants in the Chicago area, I don't know that we need to start here, but I can't resist this story about NASCAR's Kyle Larson. He drives a race car. They're not racing. They do virtual racing. McDonald's is one of his sponsors. They've dropped him. Tell us why.
That's right. So yesterday he was on a live stream. Since they're not racing, they're doing some live broadcast events. And he was on a live stream and used a racial slur. Very quickly, McDonald's has pulled that sponsorship. The exact number of it is unknown, only it's referred to as several million worth of sponsorship. A longtime supporter of a lot of NASCAR things. You know, that's a very large company. They, you know, reach a lot of markets around the world, and they, you know, really drew a line in the sand and said, absolutely not. Since that was reported, Credit One Bank has also dropped him as a sponsor, and Chevrolet has suspended him indefinitely, which is not the same as dropping the sponsorship, but they've suspended it. He issued an apology on social media and apologized and said, I should have never, ever said that. But, you know, that came really, really swiftly yesterday. NASCAR has since suspended him and ordered him to take sensitivity training. So a lot has happened to him in 24 hours after that occurred.
I don't know if he's African-American or not. He uses the N-word. He's driving this virtual car. And I've seen some video of how they do this, and it looks fun. It looks smart. And then the fans can listen in on sort of the live stream of the conversation that the drivers are having with maybe their crews about as they're racing these virtual cars around a track. It's a great thing for, you know, motorsport to be able to provide its viewers and fans. And then that word slips out, and now everything's over for him, sponsor-wise,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's really a career-changing move, for sure, for sure. You know, all that aside, it was an interesting idea of what he was doing. Here's this time when sports are canceled, and fans can kind of tune in and feel like they're still part of that sport event and connect with the drivers and hear what they're doing. And in so doing, that's when he said what he said, and so the fallout has continued. You know, NASCAR drivers have so much sponsorship. If you think about their cars and their jumpsuits, outfits, they have just logo after logo on them. So I anticipate that that fallout might continue, but a lot has happened already. Again, several million in sponsorship just from McDonald's being pulled from him.
And the relationship between NASCAR drivers and their fans is really special in sport. People love their guys. You know, I was also interested in how some of the players in the NBA have been working out, but sometimes working out together and posting pictures of them staying in shape, getting ready for the season whenever it happens. But they're not practicing social distancing at all. They're doing a lot of the things that we're told we should not be doing. So as much as they want to reach out to their fans, social media has always been a minefield for celebrities and athletes, and this time is no different, is it?
That's exactly right. You know, for so many people that are in positions where people look up to them and people that have fans, you got to kind of, you know, you got to practice what you preach, and you got to, if you're telling people to stay home, you need to be doing the same and practice that physical distancing.
What are you hearing about Boeing back to Chicago companies here?
Yeah, Boeing has taken another hit. I mean, this is a story that I've followed really closely for more than a year now, because that 737 MAX was grounded in early March of 2019, following those two fatal crashes. And so here we go into, you know, moving a year out. For a bit, it looked like, strangely and surprisingly, the issues that have hit airline carriers having to scale back flights due to the pandemic, it almost seemed like that was going to be kind of a good thing for Boeing, because they then wouldn't have to fill those orders as urgently while they're working out these safety details with this 737 MAX jet, which is otherwise their bestseller prior to it being grounded. However, what has happened now? They reported this morning an additional 75 cancellations of that plane. There are 75 that were reported earlier from an Irish leasing company, Avalon. So that brings it to 150 cancellations of this plane, adding to just more and more for Boeing to overcome. As you might recall, they pretty much wiped out a lot of people in the C-suite, including the CEO, Dennis Muilenburg, have replaced a lot of their leadership, have gone different directions, have a really long way to go to get this plane ready for service and back in the air, and, you know, FAA regulators and pilots and customers having confidence in them again. And so this is a very, very big hit to them because of how much, about a third of their revenue was dependent on this aircraft. So even it just being grounded was a very big deal to their bottom line. But to now have 150 cancellations, that's really, really huge for Boeing.
Boeing employees are testing positive. It's a big company, so maybe it's not shocking that 100 of them have tested positive for the disease. I wonder if ultimately they're going to not just furlough people, but fire people. I wonder if they're going to have, you know, longstanding layoffs as a result.
Yeah, I've been having that same thought cross my mind as they, in January and February, you know, as they really kind of started to lay off production and really seal that up after finally the last plant in the U.S. closed. It remains to be seen how they're going to treat that. I think what Boeing's next couple of moves are in the days and week ahead will be really, really significant for them to try to get out of this mess that's been really on them for a year, that's affected their bottom line, it's affected their 2020 forecast, and certainly affected their investors.
You and I are done in 45 seconds here, Amy, but some hospitals are having to get credit. I thought they would be doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, because they have suspended non-essential kind of services, any kind of medical procedure that you can delay pretty much has been delayed. And so they're pulling in credit lines that they've had available to them at a time when there was already so much pressure on hospitals pre-pandemic to consolidate healthcare, to save on cost of healthcare. There was already the beginnings of a financial crisis for the healthcare industry prior to this. So the pandemic is really pushing their resources, really costing them a lot of money. So they're looking for very creative funding beyond even just taking in credit lines. So it's going to be a very critical time for hospitals as we move into the second quarter.
WGN Radio business reporter Amy Gu. Thanks, Amy. Well done.
Thanks, John.